I'm Josh Evans, and this is my show. I'm a loving husband, a proud father, a mediocre guitarist, a fish taco lover, and I love to help organizations fix their cultures. That's right. So if you've ever been a disgruntled employee or you've ever had a disgruntled staff member, I'm here to help you fix it. So I help businesses build the right culture within their organizations to keep their employees engaged and their profits high. Hi, ladies and gentlemen, it's Josh Evans, and welcome back to my podcast. I'm so excited to have you here. I have a very special guest for you today, and y'all are all, you don't know, but you should be excited. So I have Brian Smith, who is not only the founder of UGG Boots, which my wife absolutely loves, but he's also the author of a book called The Birth of a Brand. And it's a great book that talks about his struggle in starting this company and building it to something that's amazing and now a household name. So I'd love to just say, hey, Brian, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Josh, thanks for having me, bud.
Absolutely. So you've been traveling a lot recently. Where are you at today? Are you out in California?
Yeah, I'm finally at home at my little studio here. I've been on the road the last couple of weeks. It's been fun.
Where have you been traveling?
I spoke in Colorado Springs and Austin, Texas. And before that, I spoke just here in San Diego, you know, the week before. So
fantastic.
I love speaking to entrepreneurs. It's my passion.
Oh, wonderful. Well, and I love your story because I the first time I heard it, it blew me away. And I'd love for you to share a little bit about that, if only because, and the one thing that really got me, and it's been sticking in my brain recently, is that nobody can give birth to an adult.
Yeah.
So please, why don't you expand on that just for my listeners?
Well, that's the theme of my book, because after starting UGG and running that for many years and then starting a lot of other businesses since I sold the UGG company, the common theme with everything is that you can't give birth to adults. You have to conceive it first and then take the first action. So the birth of UGG was like buying 6 pairs of samples because that was the first action. And then it just lay there, you know, and like every business, it just lies there and lies there in this infancy, and there's no amount of overfeeding or yelling at the infant that can't get up and go to college. You know, it just has to be an infant. But eventually it starts toddling, and that's when, you know, the first users are buying your product and people are writing magazine articles about you. And that quickly goes into the youth phase where, you know, that's the best of all. You got consistent orders and consistent production, and the billing and shipping is great, and customer service is great. And you can run a $20 million business in that phase. But if it's a real, really good business like UGG was, it's going to hit the teenage years, and it'll want to be at every party and every trade show in the country and every big box retailer. Super dangerous phase, and then eventually it hits maturity. But there's not a business that exists that didn't go through that cycle.
Absolutely. And there's something else you said. You had talked about a tadpole, right? To where the best way to become a frog is to be content as a tadpole. Extrapolate that a little bit more for me, because I want okay. to really catch that.
It sort of backs onto that same theme, because, you know, the number of times I go out to audiences and the, you know, the people are entrepreneurs, and they're all worried that they're not bigger and going faster and more profitable, and they're looking at everybody else next to them who seems to be further along than they are, and they all feel that there's something wrong, but there really isn't, because it takes so long. Like UGG sales were like, you know, $1,000, 28 pairs the first year, you know, and, you know, I thought I was going to be a multimillionaire in a couple of years because everybody in Australia wore sheepskin boots and nobody in America did, you know, but they just didn't get it. So it limped along about 5,000 the first year and 10 the second, and, you know, I think it was 18 the third, and the fourth year was like 25. And even though I finally figured out marketing, we can talk about that next, which jumped it to the $200,000 level in one season. I had to go through all those grinding years, and the theme of why I call this the tadpole phase is that the quickest way for a tadpole to become a frog is live every day happily as a tadpole, you know, because there's nothing you can do to accelerate it. And you might as well be happy every day and stop looking at everybody else, you know, your competitors with envy, and just appreciate being a tadpole, you know?
Absolutely. I love that idea. I mean, even for me in my own business, I can think about that and apply it to so many other things, but it's not just entrepreneurs, even huge, large businesses, none of them are content where they are now. I mean, if they were, then they're just complacent and they're all of them should be content where they are now. We always have that tendency to look over at our competitors and be like, oh man, why haven't I reached that stage?
Every one of us does that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, put it in perspective. I just read Phil Knight's book, Shoe Dog. He was the creator of Nike.
Uh-huh.
And the first 5 years sales of UGG was greater than the first 5 years sales of Nike. So even those giants have gone through the same thing in the startup phase.
Well, that makes you feel good, doesn't it? Yeah, that's awesome.
I felt much better when I read that.
That's awesome. So be honest, did you just really do these boots so that you could surf more?
Yeah, it was a great lifestyle thing because I tried the shoe stores in America first. They wouldn't even touch them, you know. Even Nordstrom said, you know, we don't sell those, we sell shoes, right?
That's great.
And so I went after the surf shops because lots of American surfers had been to Australia to go, you know, on their surf trips, and they'd brought 4 or 5 pairs of UGG boots back for their buddies. So it was really well known. You know, back the sheepskin boots were well known in the surf community. Mm-hmm. And so that was the sort of area that I started selling to. And because of that, it was, my favorite period was, it wasn't very profitable, but I used to open up the back of my van at Malibu Beach after and that's how I got that first $5,000 worth of sales in the first year.
That's awesome. I'm a terrible surfer. I surf occasionally. My brother-in-law is a big surfer, so he probably surfs. Yeah. So he went to school out on the West Coast, and now he travels probably once or twice a month to different places to surf. But because he loves it.
That's great. Yeah.
But he's always taking me out. He's like, yeah, John, hey, the waves are pretty good. Let's go. And so I'll go with him, and then it's stuff that I shouldn't be riding. It's just monster stuff that he loves to drop in on. But I'm riding, you know, 8.0, like something big boy.
I know. It's more difficult for sure.
Oh, yeah. But very cool. I want to jump into the marketing piece because I know that you had struggled early on and you tried models and stuff like that to try and get people, but that was inauthentic to the brand. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you evolved that process and where you got to.
Sure, that's a good story. It was probably 3 years I was advertising with these models at the beach, you know, wind and sea with perfect hair and, you know, perfect makeup and clothes, and the UGG boots were like main center on the ads. And the sales were like, it went from, you know, 5 to 10 to 18, and I couldn't understand why it wasn't working, because I knew the sales should be way, way more. And one day I was having a beer with one of my surf shop owners, and he just said, oh, shut up, Brian. He calls up to all these young kids in the back room, hey, come out here, what do you guys think of UGG? And every one of them just said, oh man, those UGGs, they're so fake. Have you seen those models? They can't surf. And like instantly I realized, oh my God, I'm sending the wrong image to my target market. Yeah. And so being an entrepreneur, you have to learn to pivot when you hit a wall. I decided to call a buddy of mine who was running a young surfing association for the high school kids. And I said, Pete, you got any young kids who are going to turn pro? And he gave me Mike Parsons and Ted Robinson as two guys to follow up with. And I did a deal with them. And so I ended up, instead of having an expensive photographer, I just went surfing with them with my own camera. And we chose Black's Beach in La Jolla and Trestles up in San Onofre because they're classic walks, and they're about a mile long and fantastic surf at the end. And I just did these random shots. And I started running those ads October, November, December, and sales went to over $200,000.
That's awesome.
I just felt like if I can capture this image, like every kid in the country who's reading Surfer magazine is going to die to be in these ads, you know? And it worked fantastically. And that was the beginning of me understanding marketing and advertising, whereas you got to draw the reader into the actual ad. And like the boots were so tiny in these ads, you could hardly see them, but it didn't matter. It was the environment, and every kid wanted to be walking that track with Mike Parsons and Ted Robinson, you know?
That's so cool.
And I captured that, and that began my passion for marketing, which is why UGG is a billion-dollar brand now.
That's so neat. That's so neat. So looking back, what do you think, or what are you here? No, this is a better question. What do you wish you could go back and tell yourself back in 1979?
Right.
To yourself, like if you could just go on a time machine, grab him by like the shirt and be like, here, listen to this. What would be that one piece of advice you would give yourself back then?
It's an easy one. And I didn't realize it back that, you know, in the first couple of years, but as the business grew, even though I was an accountant, you know, like a public accountant, I didn't understand finance and I didn't understand money. And, let's say we were doing, $1 million, right? In sales, you know, there'd be, you know, $50,000 at the end of the year. And I go, God, you know, that's not going to last me through summer. So I'd have to get a summer job. And so my solution was, well, next year I'll sell 2 million. And we did. And there was still only 100,000 left, right? And then we got to, let's double next year. We got to $3 or $4 million. There's still no money left. And it was because the bigger we got, the more money we had to put out for production and inventory and overhead, you know, staff, mm-hmm. The advertising and stuff. And so each year, as we were, the bigger we got, the bigger the cash flow problem became. My simplistic mind thought the answer was just more sales, but it really wasn't. It was forecasting what's going to come from next year and what sort of sales you do need. What sales you're anticipating, and then look at the cash you need to get there. And it took me many, many years to figure that out. And I wish to God I had hired somebody who knew finance when I was just getting in that. You know, when you get to that 1 million stage, you better understand how money works because it can kill you otherwise.
No, and that's a very good thought. That's something I think all businesses need to focus on, is because. Yeah. You can make all the money in the world, but if you're spending it all on the back end of that, right, your bottom line turns to nothing quick.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Very neat. That's fascinating. So what do you think was, obviously that marketing was that big turning point, right, that took you from what, 18 or 19,000 in year three or four to 200,000, which is a huge jump for anybody, especially not.
Yeah, it was big.
Yeah. How quickly did you start building a team after that? And how important was it to, I guess, instill upon them the same principles that you started the business with? Because I'm big on company culture. I know that you preach that as well. But tell me a little bit about when you started building a team and how did you make sure that they cared as much about your brand as you did?
Yeah, well, the first difficulty was that our sales were September, October, November, December, and then pretty much nothing till the next September. So you can imagine there weren't too many employees wanted to come on for 4 months, right?
Very true.
So I had to pretty much wing it myself and just hire temporary people for those first 4 or 5 years. And it was probably year six where we got over, about $1 million in sales. That's when I found an investor that would help sort of carry us over the summertime. Mm-hmm. And then I hired my first sales, the first guy I hired was another salesman, so I could concentrate more on the business and he would be out on the road, and he was fantastic. And then bit by bit, in the busy season, we would bring in people for customer service on the phones and to do all the paperwork. And we always had to hire 10 or 15 guys in the warehouse, around about September. But we had to let most of them go, by February. But we would keep the best one or two in each area as we grew it. And part of the why I kept them was because they did become true believers. You know, they become UGG fans so much. And it wasn't hard for me to I didn't have to tell them how to have passion for the business, because they'd be out, having a beer with their buddies, and where do you work? I work at UGG. Oh my God, UGG, they're so cool. So everybody, all my staff just got this validation for everywhere they went that they were working for the coolest company of all time,
See, that's awesome. I love that. That's a great thing.
Culture really came from.
Yeah, well, it was so organic. I think too many companies nowadays, they try to force a culture, right? Or they build a building hoping that makes their culture.
Exactly,
I think that's something everybody should really be aware of, is that just because, y'all have ice cream Fridays or a foosball table in the break room doesn't make it a company with phenomenal culture. I think you need to have that passion.
Yeah. It has to come from within each person. Yeah.
I totally agree with that. You hire passionate people and then watch them work. Don't try to make somebody passionate.
That's right. That's cool.
Very cool. Very neat. All right. So what's next for you? So I know you're now you've written this book and now you're speaking and you're helping other people with their businesses grow them. Tell me a little bit about that part of your business.
Well, I never expected to be a speaker, like a keynote speaker, but when I wrote the book, it was so successful. Everybody said, "Oh my God, you got to get on the road and share this." So I started, one talk and I did okay. And the next one, and everybody came up afterwards going, "Oh my God," In fact, the second talk I ever gave, a girl came up and handed me a note and I read it later and she said, "I was going to give up my business today, but now you've made me see that I'm in this infancy stage. So I'm going to renew my efforts to keep it going."
I love it.
And she did. And so there's all sorts of versions of that people come up and tell me after the event, especially the tadpole. It sounds like a funny little quote, but people really understand the tadpole thing. Like, "Oh my God, I've been so hard on myself. And now I'm just going to ease up and enjoy it a bit more."
Absolutely. It is simple, but it's so profound. I mean, it stuck with me for about 2 years ago was when we first met. And I think we had years of that night. I was just thinking, I can't, the tadpole thing, it just sticks in your brain. You're like, it's okay.
It's a powerful piece of philosophy.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
And so it's the incredible feedback I get from entrepreneurs from when I come off the stage that makes me really want to do it more. And I'm getting better and better at it. And my stories are getting, sharper and more succinct and more to the point. So I'm getting more, feedback from the audiences. So it's something that I love. So yeah, if any of your listeners are looking for a great keynote speaker at their organization, then just keep me in mind. You can get me at brian@uggfounder.com. That's uggfounder.com.
Awesome. Awesome. So where's your favorite place to surf? Ever.
Well, it's probably still Malibu on a day when there's not too many crowds. But I do a lot of surfing. I live in San Diego, so I live right next to Cardiff Reef. So I surf that a lot. It's a little bit north of La Jolla. I've had trips myself like down to El Salvador and stuff, which have been fantastic. But I'm really not that much of a daredevil surfer anymore. I just like to go out and cruise with the old guys.
I hear it. Yeah. Slow and easy gets me into shore, man.
That's right.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of parallels. And I'm only thinking about this now because we're having the conversation. There's a lot of parallels between business and surfing as well. Because it's about patience and it's about respect and it's about understanding what's going on around you. And I think too many people, at least in business, they're too quick to make snap judgments, right? As in getting on a wave they shouldn't, or jumping ahead of somebody else. And I think there's a lot of parallels to be made there as well. Now, the more I think about it, the more there are.
It's very, very true. There's sometimes you hit it on the head. Like some guys, will be out there because it's big surf and it's like, "Oh, wow, we're out here in this big surf." But, the number of times where I've been taking off on a wave and these idiots are in the wrong position, like right in front of me, and then instead of going behind, they try and bail out in front, which it's just so dangerous. So you've got to know your capacity or your limits. And the other thing is there is a huge amount of pecking order respect out in the water. It looks like a bunch of guys all out in the water, but there's a very unwritten rule about how to proceed, on whose wave and who's got right away. And if you come into that without knowing that, you can cause a lot of chaos and hurt yourself. So yeah, there's tremendous parallels.
That's very neat. I like that a lot. What do you think was the biggest thing you struggled with early on in the business? What was that single, and don't say cash flow, because we know that's a problem.
Yeah.
What was something that you personally struggled with? Was it a frustration? Was it confusion? I don't know. I mean, those are things that I think.
Well, I was doing summer jobs, right, just to stay alive. And, my life was sort of built around the UGG business, but it was like a 2 or 3 month thing every year. And it was hard. And I just got married then. And it was really hard trying to feel good about myself when it wasn't really working. Hmm. And it's a big thing entrepreneurs do. They tend to make their whole being about their business instead of you know, what I learned now is that, hey, I'm a completely whole human being. I've got a, you know, spirit of God in me, and I've got free will. I can do what I want. And I am not my business anymore. But there was a period at UGG where I was my business. And if the business wasn't doing well, I was down in the dumps. And we'd have a great day in at the business. I'd be up on top of things, you know. So it took me a long time to realize that the business is just should be something that you do on the side of your life to bring in income, or you know let your passions and interests run wild, you know. But it is not, the business isn't you. And if you know, I think that's a big thing that I talk about on the stage now, and people just clap every time I bring that up.
No, I love that.
You know, I don't know if you think that you are your podcast, you know.
No. This is but a part of my business, and my business is but a part of my life.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, that's a healthy attitude.
Well, and so it's funny because I speak to a lot of my clients, what I found is in working together in the business, they have this whole idea, and I hate this phrase, work-life balance. As if they're assuming that your life and work should somehow be in balance, and where work isn't equal to life. Work is a small part of your life.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for some sort of balance there, you have the wrong perspective. And so I fight against that sort of mentality, because people often take on this perspective like, yeah, no, I have my work self, right? My professional guy. Yeah. And then I have my personal self. Well, I mean, if anything, that's a lack of integrity if you're not the same person at work as you are in your personal life. But the second thing is that you're giving work too much power over your life, because depending on what you do, you take home part of your work back into your life, right?
Yeah.
So if you take it too seriously, it's going to negatively affect you when you have a bad day, or positively affect you when you have a good day.
Yep. No, you absolutely put it in perfect words. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's something I see all the time too. But I love that idea of, you know, you're not your job. You are you, and your job is but part of
that's right.
your existence, not the reason for your existence.
Yeah. If I could just get that message out to a million people, that'll be making a lot of people healthier.
I agree. I like that a lot. Well, if there was one final piece of advice you could say to any human being right now, say it's you know, maybe a middle manager that's struggling with whatever job he's working on, or that early entrepreneur, what would be that single piece of advice if you could grab them and just be like, look, listen to this one thing. It's going to make life seem better. Would it be what you just said, which is you are not your job?
No, I've got another thing that I think is really powerful. I live my life by, and that is that nearly always your most disappointing disappointments become your greatest blessings.
Ooh.
And I ask people on the stage, you know, how many of you, you know, put your hand up if something happened to you in the last year where at the time you thought it was a huge, you know, breakdown or disappointment or whatever, and you look back now and you think, thank God that happened. That's the best thing that ever happened. And it's nearly everybody puts their hand up, because it's amazing when something sort of goes wrong. If you have a positive attitude towards it, like I say, God damn it, that's great. You know, now what's great about it? Yeah. And you'll be staggered at how fast you'll come up with a way around it, or a way over it, or a different way of looking at it. Or, you know, if it's a people thing, you'll hire somebody different. And you look back a couple of months later and go, shit, we're doing so great now. Thank God that happened. And if people could just take that attitude forward in their lives, that's probably the biggest, you know, mind easer of all of the things that I talk about.
I'm writing that down.
Good.
Hold on. God damn it.
Your most disappointing disappointment.
That's great. No, always, I already wrote that.
Yeah, just, always become your greatest blessings.
That is awesome. Well, it's funny. I was on a trip this past weekend for a wedding in like St. Louis, and I got back home late, and I'm thinking about all the stuff I have to do today. Besides our podcast, I have some client meetings. I have a speech later this week. I have a big retreat I'm running next week, and I have all these things. And I was like, I need to prepare. I have too much going on. Yeah. And like, I was feeling overwhelmed, and I lean over to my wife and I was like, honey, I just can't sleep. I have all this stuff. I have too much going on. This is terrible. And she goes, wait a second. You have a lot of business right now. It's terrible. And I was like, wait, you're right. No, it's good. If I didn't have business, it'd be a whole different thing this night. This is a good kind of overwhelmed. And so it is all in the perspective.
It is. It's fantastic. That's a great way of explaining it. Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Well, you know, it's been an honor to have you on. It really is. And I want people to know, if they want to dive deeper with you, where can they get your book?
You can buy it on Amazon. It's called The Birth of a Brand, and or also my website. And the website is brian@uggfounder.com. And if you want to book me for a talk or you know, talk about some other relationship, I'm more than happy to, you know, correspond. It'd be fantastic.
Perfect. Well, Brian, thank you so much for coming on. I'm honored to have you, and I'm sure all my listeners are very honored to have heard you as well.
Well, thanks, Josh. I really appreciate much. That.
Absolutely. Yeah. So everybody, thank you again for coming. If you have a chance to look up his book, you absolutely should. And if you need somebody to come in and inspire your team to really figure out where they're going and how to be successful as a tadpole to get to the frog stage, you should definitely check out Brian Smith. Wait, it's BrianSmithUggFounder.com.
That's, yeah, Brian@UggFounder.com.
Brian. Oh, that's your email.
Yeah.
Ooh, he's giving you his personal email, people. Be careful. Yeah. Anyway, well, thank you so much, Brian. Y'all have a great rest of your day. We'll see y'all around.
Good. Catch you later.
All right.